I'm Ken Best, editor of UConn Magazine. Doug Casa is professor of kinesiology in the NEAC School of Education at the University of Connecticut and an expert in preventing exertional heat stroke in athletes. He is also chief executive officer of the new Corey Stringer Institute at UConn, which aims to prevent heat stroke in athletes. We began our discussion about the Corey Stringer Institute with Professor Casa, describing the issue of heat stroke.
Well, the Corey Stringer Institute was officially formed in April of 2010, and this year just recently, because of a long process where Kelsey Stringer, the widow of Corey Stringer, had been fighting legal battles with many different entities through the years. But in January of 2009, she finally came to a settlement with the NFL. And part of that settlement was to form some kind of heat illness institute that could somehow leave a legacy for her husband that passed away. Her husband was Corey Stringer. He had a heat stroke in 2001 as a participant for the Minnesota Vikings. He was an offensive lineman. So after that settlement took place, Kelsey Stringer and her lawyers contacted me here at the University of Connecticut and asked if we would be interested in potentially being the home of the Corey Stringer Institute. And that was soon after that original settlement took place. And then we worked together for about a year to work out a lot of the details and to do a lot of the background work. And then at the NFL draft this year at Radio City Music Hall in New York City, we had a press conference announcing the official opening of the Corey Stringer Institute at the University of Connecticut. And as part of that, the reason that Kelsey came to us is I assisted Kelsey as an expert witness for a lot of her legal work over the last 4 or 5 years. And so she'd come to know the work that we do here at the University of Connecticut and trusted that we would continue to promote Corey's name to try to maybe prevent future kids and athletes from dying from heat stroke.
Now, the NFL and the NCAA have been on this issue since then and even before that, but you're really targeting high school level athletes and coaches where the awareness and the precautions are not necessarily what they should be.
Yeah, that's correct. The high school athletes are by far one of our main groups that we're focusing on. First of all, it's the biggest where the most number of athletes participate in our country. And second, unfortunately, right now, about half of the high schools in America don't have athletic trainers, and athletic trainers are the medical professionals that prevent, recognize, and treat athletic injuries. So if you have half of the high schools that don't have an athletic trainer there, like all colleges and pro teams do, the coach is going to be the person that's in charge of, one, preventing the condition in the first place. If the condition does occur, assessing what it is. Is it a head injury? Is it exertional sickling? Is it a cardiac condition? Is it a heat stroke? And then based on the condition, they're going to have to apply that the appropriate treatment until the ambulance arrives. So that's a little bit scary, and it should be scary for parents that the coach is going to be in charge of the life or death situations for their children.
Now, let's define exertional heat stroke a little bit more. What exactly is that, and how can it be prevented and treated?
All right. Exertional heat stroke is the most serious heat illness. The other heat illnesses could not cause death. For instance, other heat illnesses might be like heat cramps or heat exhaustion. But heat stroke is simply when the person's thermoregulatory system or their ability to cool themselves during exercise is overwhelmed. So you're basically generating more heat in a given period of time than you're able to lose, and you do that for some prolonged period of time, and your body temperature, which is normally during exercise in the heat, maybe 101, 102, 103, that's normal during exercise in the heat. Someone with heat stroke might be 107, 108, 109 degrees. Well, that extreme heat causes problems with the body, and one of the problems is central nervous system dysfunction, where the person will become confused, disoriented, potentially go into a coma, lose consciousness. But the CNS dysfunction and the extreme hypothermia, like temperatures over 106 at the time of collapse, are our two key diagnostic criteria that a heat stroke is present. There are a myriad of things that you can do to prevent heat stroke in the first place. They focus mostly on probably six broad items. One is the intensity of the exercise session. If you would decrease the intensity, for instance, if a person's outside and they're running, maybe they should be jogging. If they're jogging, they should be walking. If they're walking, maybe they should be inside if there's problems associated with those levels of intensity. But if you're at a practice session, maybe a coach needs to have more rest breaks, maybe need to back off on the amount of conditioning sessions that they're doing. Second item after intensity is the environmental condition. So how hot is it with the humidity outside? So you can alter that equation by maybe exercising earlier in the day or later in the day. You could maybe, if you're a runner, run on a trail and be in the shade and be on dirt instead of running on hot blacktop out in the sun. So there's a lot of things you can do to potentially alter the environmental conditions that you're exercising in. Third is the hydration status of the person. Obviously, you want to prevent athletes from becoming dehydrated. Approximately every additional 1% body mass loss due to dehydration, your body temperature is a half a degree higher. So typically an athlete might leave the field 4% dehydrated based on their body mass losses. That means that athlete's 2 degrees higher than they would be if they had kept hydrated.
And we're talking about how much how much they sweat.
Correct.
And how much they replace those fluids.
Yeah, how much their weight due to sweat losses. So if you're close to matching your sweat losses with the fluid intake, then you're not going to be hotter than you need to be outside. So hydration is very protective. The fourth one is the equipment that they wear. So certain sports have equipment, but that's also relevant for soldiers with an industrial laborers. A lot of people have to have protective clothing on or like nuclear biological chemical warfare gear in certain work settings. But certainly football in the sports setting is the biggest equipment issue that we have. So we always tell people to take the equipment off on the really hot days or phase in the amount of equipment that they're using. A fifth one is heat acclimatization. That's a fancy word for the basic physiological changes that your body is able to undergo in the first 7 to 10 days of exercising the heat. So you can just handle more exercise in the heat a week after starting to exercise in the heat than you can on the first day. So with the NCAA did back in 2003, they invoked a specific heat acclimatization program for athletes, for their football players, so that in the first 5 days, for instance, you can't do two-a-day practices and you can't be in full gear on the first 4 days. So you're slowly ramping up the stresses, whether it be intensity, the length of the duration of the activity, and the amount of equipment.
So in other words, it's really getting in condition to do better conditioning, just as you would build up your tolerance for longer distances if you're running a marathon or if you're trying to lift weight, you build your capacity up gradually.
Absolutely. Yeah, the fitness status is a very important factor, and that really plays into the first one that I mentioned is the intensity, because if you're really fit and then you have to do a set activity, it's not going to be as hard for you to do if you're really fit. The sixth one is more specific to individuals and coaches, meaning is the individual trying to make the team, are they less likely maybe to report problems they're having to their coaches, or are the coaches not implementing proper strategies, or they're just, you know, personality factors that they're just not doing the right thing out there.
Now, as far as once those symptoms may be recognized, which is going to happen from time to time, what are the immediate things that need to happen and that coaches should know?
Sure. In an ideal world, certainly at the high school level or college or pro, you want the athletic trainer to be the one who's doing the initial assessment. And the way of differentiating heat stroke from other serious conditions that could cause death in sport, it would be the CNS dysfunction associated with the extreme hyperthermia. And the only way to accurately get the extreme hypothermia is doing a rectal temperature, because tympanic or oral or axillary, they're not accurate when people are doing intense exercise in the heat, which is another reason why you want medical staff there. And it's not easy to differentiate some of these serious conditions. If an athlete is down on the field, you don't know if they potentially got a head injury or they have a cardiac condition or they have a heat stroke, because they're unconscious in front of you and you have to make some tough decisions. But obviously, if a heat stroke is thought to have occurred, the way that has proven 100% successful in the past is that if you get somebody into a cold water bath within 10 minutes of collapse, that has been shown to have 100% survival thus far. So, for instance, at Falmouth Road Race, every August in Massachusetts that takes place in the second Sunday in August, we average 10 to 12 heat strokes there every single year, which is amazing because it's just a 12K race. And they come in the span of just 10 to 15 minutes, we get these 10 to 12 heat strokes. But they're set up with 15 immersion tubs and teams ready to cool these people down. And the starting temps are in the 107 to 109 range. And we get them down to 102, 103 in 20 minutes. And in the 39-year history of their race, they've had over 400 heat strokes and zero fatalities. And that's what we recommend. And it's been great success in many other places in the military and at other road race settings.
Now, are these immersion tubs available at most football practices as a routine, or is that something that needs to happen?
That's something we're working really hard right now. I mean, these tubs, some of the best ones are made by Rubbermaid. They call them stock tanks, and we generally recommend a 150-gallon size tank. They can be purchased at like farm supply stores or places like Home Depot or Lowe's or things like that. At the college and pro level, we've made a lot of progress that these tubs are readily accessible out on the fields, and people are ready to go with cold water immersion baths if they need them. At the high school level, we're still trying to make progress. Obviously, if they're an athletic trainer's at that school, they probably have a plan in place to immediately cool them. But if there's not a medical person there, there's probably not a tub there, and there's probably not much of a plan invoked because there's not a person who would necessarily take care of that. So if the cooling is delayed in a heat stroke case, that dramatically increases the likelihood there'll be a fatality.
Now, this is a personal issue for you, as I understand it. You actually suffered exertional heat stroke when you were very young, and it sort of put your path toward a career on this. Tell us about that.
Sure. When I was 16 years old, competing for the Long Island Division in the Empire State Games in New York State, in August of 1985, I was running in Buffalo in the championship race, a 10K race, which is a 25-lap race on the track. On the very final lap, I was running one of my best races of my life up to that point, and I collapsed with about 200 meters to go. I immediately got up, and then about 150 meters later, I collapsed again just before the finish line. I was very lucky to have an athletic trainer on site, immediately recognized heat stroke, immediately started cooling me, got me into an ambulance quickly where they continued to cool me en route and got some great care at the emergency room in Buffalo, and they got my temperature down from the 108 range down to like 102 in less than an hour, which thinking was very important in terms of a life-saving modality. But that evening, actually, I saw myself on the local evening news when I was wheeled into a room. And I think actually seeing yourself collapse and being cared for had a lasting image and effect. And basically for the last 25 years, I've been pretty focused on trying to see if we can prevent future cases of heat stroke, and if they do occur, make sure they're treated properly.
Now, we're entering that time of year when football practice is going to be ramping up all over the country, here at UConn, professional camps, and high schools a little bit later. What's the final word on this from you on the subject?
When it comes to heat stroke, it's the greatest tragedy when you hear about a death from heat stroke, because with the proper treatment, proper assessment on site and proper treatment, we have found that they've been 100% survivable cases of heat stroke. So it really is the ultimate tragedy when someone dies from heat stroke, because obviously it's a tragedy that occurs in the first place, but the real tragedy is if they die from the condition. So there's a lot we can do to prevent it. We got to work really hard to make sure every high school in America has an athletic trainer working with their high school sports teams. So you have a medical person in charge of that care, and we got to make sure that they're doing the right things for heat stroke. That's really the mission of the Corey String Institute. Our goal is to try to get the word out to try to help people.
Okay, Doug Casa, professor of kinesiology here at the University of Connecticut at the NEOC School of Education and the chief operating officer of the Corey Stringer Institute, which is taking on this issue of preventing sudden death in athletes. Thanks.
All right, thank you very much.